Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, we will be speaking with Byron Lacy, who has returned to share his wisdom on starseeds, walk-ins, and wanderers. But before we start, you may ask, what is Hercules and the Space Gods? Well, it is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcasts on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, 15 or so to date, a variety of live, now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space Gods supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. And now we delve into the metaphysical realm with Byron Lacy. Greetings and welcome, Byron. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, too. I was very excited when I visited your Facebook page, and I saw that you had put Lyran starseeds on it. And I had wanted to do a show on starseeds, and then in our conversation, you brought up walk-ins, and I wanted to talk about that, too. So it's fantastic that we connected, and I'm looking forward to exchanging information.
Me, too. That the picture is of my grandfather and his brother and their sister, and one of them was abducted. At least there may have been more. There have been 4 to 9 generations of my family. I was talking to a psychic I know, and she said that we actually were first abducted in Ireland, and that's where we came from.
Yes, we discussed a little bit last time you were on the connection between the Fae and the aliens, which is that was a very esoteric subject like 20 years ago, and now through popular entertainment, even it's the awareness of it has sunk into the popular imagination.
It's amazing how everything has gotten much bigger in the last 2 years.
Yes. So now my family has a history of abductions too, but they didn't understand them as abductions either. These were seen in terms of paranormal, spiritual, and mythological type of events. However, in retrospect, you know, looking at them through the lens that we currently have of UFOs and aliens, it's very easy to identify, you know, what these things were. And I tried while they were still alive, and some of them still are, but most of them have passed, to get as many of the stories as I could. And actually, that's how I started publishing. I started publishing some of these stories in a paranormal anthology, and that started that whole voyage.
I wish that my parents had been alive when I discovered what was going on. Of course, they already knew, and a few things they had told me let me in that they knew, but they didn't want me to know. They didn't want me to talk about it.
Well,
they didn't want me.
They probably wanted to protect you, too. I ran into that a lot with trying to get family members to talk. That, you know, basically they felt that by keeping silent about it and not sharing it, they were protecting you in some way from it. But my argument was always, by not telling me about it, you're leaving me ignorant of what these things I'm experiencing are, and I have no context for them. So that usually helped the conversation move forward.
Right. I think the ancestor of mine, the woman that was placed in an insane asylum in the 1900s or late 1800s, I think it was early 1900s, because little men came and visited her in her room at night, and she would never walk back on that statement. So they locked her up, and she died there. But that put the fear in everybody else in the family.
Yeah, that's understandable. Now, immediately, the first thing somebody would think of is the Greys, you know, that somehow the person was an abductee.
Right. And that, since she said little men, I'm pretty sure it probably was Greys.
Was she very much in tune with the traditions of Ireland?
I really don't know. I mean, the conversation with my father was very brief, and I couldn't figure out why he was saying that to me at that point, because my problem had been this song that had played in my head all night long. So it really confused me. But I never really asked him for very much detail, because you got what he gave you at the first, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah,
he's very much an authoritarian.
That generation was.
Yes. So there's no telling what they could have told me.
Why do you think that your family was chosen?
Okay, well, I think, because I really don't know for sure, but I think, you know, they took a lot of people in Ireland for whatever their reasons are. So my family met the criteria, and I think they were slowly altered slightly genetically. I think they were altered genetically to eventually become gateways for starseed to come here.
Now, what is your understanding of starseeds?
For me, a starseed is a soul, a being from another planet or dimension that volunteered to come here to help, particularly for this period in time, but I'm saying like for 40 or 50 years before and maybe time after. And they volunteered to come here. They did not die. Even if they were born here, they didn't die where they're from. They're either in a stasis or they're there with a maybe a reduced capacity, maybe not.
That's pretty much my understanding as well. Way back when we lived in Pennsylvania, we had something called the Olympian Starseeds Initiative. And it was a public manifestation of something I've been doing my entire life. I'm Greek, so my orientation is more mythic. So my initial understanding before I learned about UFOs was that it was something mythical. So I had written as part of the literature for the Olympian Starseeds Initiative that Olympian starseeds are embodied reflections of Olympus's light that have chosen to drink the waters of forgetfulness and enter the dream of mortality to assist in the great awakening on Gaia. The Olympian Starseeds Initiative, and I'll just call it OSI for now, it's a lot to say, is tasked with locating and liberating incarnate Olympians ensnared by the dream of mortality and reminding them of their Olympian mission. The OSI, mindful that archetypal Olympian patterns have been programmed into the human psyche, believes in assisting all people on Gaia with actualizing their maximal potential. So that, to the best of my ability, was how I understood, you know, what that was all about and what I was doing about it specifically. And now I felt it was ready to bring that back. You know, in Pennsylvania, we had it running for a while, and we were talking to all sorts of people. And we even had podcasts back then, too. But then, you know, it wasn't the right time. But now I feel it's the right time. So, you know, I'm very excited and energized by getting back into these topics again.
Yeah. That what you just read makes total sense. And you could just slip the word alien or starseed in there instead of Olympus or Zeus or anything like that.
Most certainly so. These are universal human experiences. And one thing I've learned in all my explorations is we understand it or describe it in different ways. but the experiences described seem to be pretty universal and to have been with us since the dawn of time, since descriptions survived throughout our history.
Right. I think it's amazing. I've noticed that, well, A, they don't tell you what your mission is. You sort of have to discover it, or you've been given a natural genetic proclivity for heading in that direction anyway. And they don't get upset with you if you fail.
No.
In fact, there are many wealthy starseed who failed, and they're running banks and things like that. And so they got totally sucked into materiality, money, and power.
Yes, I've noticed too in my attempts to do something with this that some people wake up for a little while, and then when whatever they were doing is done, they slip back into the dream of mortality and the types of things that are important to people living in this time become important
right.
to them, and you know, they live the type of lives that are scripted by our society. So, there's never any judgment that I've felt against people who are dreaming. And there's kind of like an understanding that if people want to sleep, let them sleep.
Yeah, that's I like that in a way. I was going to be a walk-in.
Uh-huh.
Which, that's what I agreed to. And some of the information that they downloaded in my mind several years ago has come forth for me, and that's part of it. And if that had happened, I would have all my abilities, all my psychic abilities that I'd had on the planet I was from or the dimension I was from, because on most planets, or for a lot of the alien races, as they mature, they become enlightened. Humans, we grow to a certain maturity, and we stop there because it's all we need to earn money for food and water and stay alive and have a shelter and all that.
Right.
And if you want more than that, you have to work for it. And I think somehow the ego got slipped into us, and I don't know if it was originally in us or if it was added. Some ancient texts think it was added later to slow us down and keep us from becoming enlightened naturally. So anyway, if I had been a walk-in, that would have been perfect. And the way I understand it is they had a body for me with a being that wanted that body for approximately 2.5 years. And then it wanted to leave. It didn't want, you know, some souls only want to be a fetus for a little while. That's the only touch they want with this planet. And then they want to be gone. Some want to be babies. And then some of us want to live for a long, long time. But at the last minute, that soul decided it didn't want to come at all. I was supposed to be slipped in during the operation or before the body woke up after the operation, sometime right in there. Well, the being that was coming here decided it didn't want anything to do with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they got me to be born in this body, which made me lose all of that. And I think in general for starseed, the reason we feel life is so hard here is because we were enlightened and we thought, I've already got it, I can get it again real fast. Well, they didn't know the blockages of these brains that we have that keep us from that.
That seems to be the prevailing impression of anybody who's explored or identified with these mysteries, that we come from somewhere else, we're here to help out, that there are various ways of entering the human life stream, and we're specialists. We've done this time and again, and we're experts at unprogramming ourselves to a greater or lesser degree so that we can help others who are on the mission untangle themselves or deprogram themselves, and then we can help people as well, you know, because the human life stream, according to my thoughts on it, contains lessons and experiences that are valuable in and of themselves. And life is like a schoolroom in a way. We're here to help people learn and process the school so that they can, as you say, raise their consciousness and become enlightened, because this is a strange world, and to those who aren't from it, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
No.
Most of the time, not even sometimes.
It's like, why did I do this? What the heck was I thinking? I know I hear that all the time, and I've said it myself too.
Now, are you involved in the greater UFO community?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I have my webpage. I've written my book. I write things. I have about almost 5,000 followers. And then I also belong to some pages where I post my posts about my experiences and my thoughts. But like the things we've been talking about so far, I have not read or researched. These were things that just flowed into my mind. And then people like you say something and I'm going, that verifies what I thought. And I know a few people, and a lot of people know me. But that's pretty much what's going on right now. Although things could increase, or things could shrink, because for a while things were going really good, and I was getting a lot of information out, and then I sort of dried up, and it sort of dried up, and last year, towards the end of the year, it started hitting and happening for me, and then this year, well, it's the 2nd of March, and I'm on the radio talking to people again.
Good, good. Yeah, things have, I don't know if it's the pandemic and more people are doing broadcasts and they're looking for guests, but I've been invited on several shows this past month or so also. So, you know, it's good in a way, this isolation that we're currently experiencing, and it's forcing us to connect in new ways. And when the pandemic is gone, we'll still have these new ways to communicate and to get our message out. And these recordings last, you know, for, you know, I guess technically forever with all these efforts to preserve the internet at various stages. So this would all be accessible on these archive sites and things like that. So it's a very exciting time to be here.
About a week and a half ago, we had snow. We had the worst storm we've had since like 87. And at one point, it was minus 15 degrees.
Wow.
I had, for 5 days, I had no electricity, no telephone, no television, no music. The only food I had was what I had bought, and luckily I had, and the water I had, something told me the day before it hit, it said, go buy water. And luckily I found 10 gallons and I used 8 of it.
Wow.
Until the day everything started. But I started going through this, it was almost like being in a deprivation tank. I sat in a room with the wood stove, which is what kept me warm. And I had propane too, but it wouldn't have carried the load all by itself. And I looked out the window, it's solid white, and I started getting depressed. And at one point I said, if you guys just make this go away. I said, well, actually, first I begged them to make the electricity come on, even though I knew they wouldn't do that. I begged them to make the snow stop, even though I knew they wouldn't do that. Then I said, just make my mood go away, because it was so dark. It's the only way I can explain it. It was very dark. In fact, it seemed, and I read this, so it was interesting. I read it later. It seemed like an hour took like 3 hours. And I almost felt, I sort of felt like I wished I was dead. I kept going, I wish I had gone into the light when they gave me the opportunity. It would have been just easy. I'd have just gone. But I said, make it stop. And I'm sitting there, and like somebody flipped a switch, my mood changed to perfectly fine.
Oh, great.
And
Mark,
I'm going, wow.
Mark Brinkerhoff, who's the guest on the show, he communicates with celestials also, and he says you can ask them to do like miraculous things. And
yes.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted your story.
No, that after that I said, do y'all really want me to still be doing this alien stuff? Do you still may want me talking about it? If you do, you're going to have to give me some kind of help or give me a boost, something, because I don't know what to do next. Well, the day after the electricity came on, no, I'm lying, it was 3 days ago, I've lost grasp of time recently. Well, 3 days ago, I got a message on Facebook from a lady who is a friend of mine about 14 years ago, and she's a psychic. Her name's Star Fuentes, and she sent me this message, and it said, this is my house, and she showed me a picture of it, and it had it's a dome with room around it, and she said, we have visitors here all the time. And I thought, oh, okay, and then I went, visitors, and I wrote back, do you mean aliens? And she said, yes. She said, and there are three events in your life that you have not looked at enough. You need to explore them. One of them had to do with an old, old house that you used to go to. Now, I had never told anybody about this house, but I had thought of it a lot, going, why did three 11 and 12-year-old boys go out to this old house in the middle of the pasture and lay down in a mowed, the house was built in the 1900s, and it had newspapers on the wall with stuff that were used as wallpaper that had stories about the Great Depression in it. It was all from that time period. There was nothing else in the house. And it was in fairly good shape because it had a good roof. And next to it was a sort of a little valley or dry run that was about 15 foot deep with the dirt sloping down into it. And like it may have been natural, but it had been mowed and stuff for so many years because whoever fixed up the pasture mowed that ditch next to the house. We would go out there. And we'd look at the newspapers, and then we'd go to the ravine, the ditch, and we would each lay on one of these three ramps of dirt and grass that flowed into there. And then we would close our eyes and not talk and not do anything. And just, I would start out by looking at the clouds for a little while, and then I'd close my eyes, and then it'd just be darkness. You know, I'd just be laying there for 20 or 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden we get up and we go home. And every time we went there, we'd meet, we'd go, what are we going to do? And on those particular days, we all wanted to go to the house.
Wow.
Well, I started meditating on it after she had told me. I started meditating on it. And the first thing was I had a brief memory of all of us standing down in the bottom of the ditch. And it was a flash, but there were two extra people there had never been anybody there with us, and there was a bulge coming down from the sky, like a saucer shaped bulge, like somehow the sky was bulging down. And that's what I was seeing in this meditation, and I realized pretty quickly that that was a ship. Then I did see these three beings that were standing at the top of those slopes, and they put one hand out towards us, and then we were underneath the ship, and a big beam of light hit us, and then that was it.
Wow. So these memories all came floating back.
Yes. So we were abducted in 61. It wasn't just the car accident that happened at that time. There were other things going on. And there were two of my friends that were abducted.
do you think they remember anything? Or?
Do what now?
Do you think they remember anything?
Oh, I know they don't. They remember being with me in one of the near-fatal car accidents. They were there. They were in the car. And it was a Volkswagen. I don't think I talked about it last night. We were going fishing, and we were on Highway 75. And I realized we'd missed our turnoff to go to Lake Tawakoni. So I pulled into the middle lane. We were in a Volkswagen that had no air conditioning, a Volkswagen Beetle, a 68. And I had my elbow up on the windowsill because I always rode like that. I pulled my arm in, and I don't know why, and I flipped on the turn signal, and I looked in the mirror, and the mirror turned white and exploded, and all I saw was this whiteness and this dragging sound as this Econoline van scraped through the entire left side of the car. And I don't know why he did that, because he could have passed without any problems on the other side. There was two, it was four lanes in all. But anyway, they were with me at that point. And my arm would have been ripped off if I had not pulled my arm in. And I usually didn't.
So it sounds like they communicate with you through your impulses, you know, that you'll feel a direction and you follow your impulses, and that protects you.
Yes. Or at that point, they might have even been controlling me. They can control my body.
Okay.
They can send me, like, they've moved my body. When I was almost hit by a car, they actually pulled me off. Another thing I remembered was when I was hit by the car, I was suddenly in a ship with them, and they were moving across the highway away from where the car was, and they went over the store that I would later work in, and I saw the roof of it, because there was what at first I thought was a window, but then I realized that I was looking through the wall, or that something was projecting onto the wall. I didn't know. Then we changed directions and headed right back without making a circle. I mean, we were going one direction and then we were going back, and there was no inertial effect in the car. And then I was on the ground rolling in front of the car, but of course I did not remember being in the ship until 2 days ago. I had vague thoughts about it, but it was much clearer this time. So they control my body while I was rolling in front of the car, and they kept me from being able to move. And if I had moved, I would have been killed.
Well, I'm glad they intervened, and I'm glad that you listened to your impulses. That it's commonly said among anybody who works with the spiritual, that whether you're working through meditation, whether you're working through dreams, whether you're having visionary experiences or experiences that aren't totally on the physical, that the celestials or the spirits or the aliens have the ability to block your memory so that you don't remember until it's time for you to remember. So that's something that's a very common belief in the field.
But that seems to be true to my experience.
Mine as well.
Because, yeah, and I always love it if I remember anything at all. I think that she was actually, and she may or may not have known, because I know they've abducted her and they talked to her, Star. I think that they sort of tapped her on the shoulder and had her call, had her message me and tell me that as an answer to what I'd asked for, the help, when I was in the snowstorm.
That's great. And you knew this person 14 years ago?
Yes. She is a shaman as well as a psychic and a healer and a teacher. And she let me hang around with her because I had potential abilities. Actually, she knew I was an abductee then, but she said I wasn't ready to know. So, because when you've got... If you're around someone with very high vibratorial rate, psychic and all that stuff, it raises you up. So I spent a lot of time with her for that reason.
And it sounds like you're benefiting from your association. That's awesome.
Yes. Of course,
now,
I already have before, but yes.
We're talking about walk-ins, and it occurred to me, for someone who's not familiar with the terminology, that might seem like a puzzling term, although you did share the context. So, you know, people can, I guess, put one and one together to make two. But can you explain your understanding of walk-ins, how that whole procedure works a little bit more?
Yes. Well, basically, and the person, okay, the body, let's just say the body first, it's born and it has a soul in it. For some reason, that soul wants to leave. And the powers that be, whatever they are, aliens or whatever, they've got somebody earmarked to take that body. And so they remove the soul and let it go, and they put the new soul in. And then that's the body. And you can access all of the memories in the brain. You know, the brain really doesn't think all that much. It's a muscle or a machine. It's an organ.
Right.
And the thoughts happen in other places, and I've touched upon them. They're so fast that you could say, you could read the whole, you could think the whole page of a book in less than a second. And the brain slows that down. In fact, that sentence will be said over and over and over until it gets to the speed that I'm talking now. And that's when we recognize it, when it gets slow.
That's a great description. I've been doing mental exercises and spiritual exercises as well as physical exercise, which I guess I'm best known for, since I was very young. And I know that when you train your consciousness, like, you get to places where you understand the relationship between the mind and the body that you described. Then there are states of mind where time, as we know it, doesn't exist in a way that we understand it. And I think we touched upon this a bit last time. That's a very excellent way of describing that. Thank you.
I think that the aliens talk to us through that same mechanism. In other words, where our thoughts actually, they may not even be our thoughts. They may come into us, but they may be. I don't know that for sure, but I think that they can talk at that point really fast where we don't recognize it, and it slows down, and then we think we've got an idea. Or if you've been paying attention for a while, a few years, you know that they are talking to you and that thought is not yours.
I've also learned that synchronicity is an excellent way of being aware of the hands of the gods that might be at work in your life. You know, they will try to get your attention through synchronicities, all sorts of weird coincidences or timely statements or chance heard conversations. It's really quite remarkable once you tap into that.
It's sort of like some weird alien IQ test. I mean, like, why don't you just tell me, I want you to go write a book instead of all this other stuff.
Well, I think we're here to figure it out. And I think, like we had discussed earlier, that somehow we're specialists in deprogramming, and we have to deprogram ourselves, and we have to figure it out, and then we have to apply it. What I've been learning recently is that, pretty much despite everything that I do, everything's pretty much under control. So, whether I'm here or not here doesn't really matter in the ultimate scheme of things. You know, I'm part of the process, but Uriel, Ruth Norman said, I'm just a cog in the machine, that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, I think some of the people that irritate me the most are the ones that are so programmed, they're just like machines, and they all talk alike, and they all have the same opinions, and they all have the same goals, and they attacked our capital. They just get really irritating. They're sheep.
Gary, what's going on? Don't want to get too much into a politically themed discussion.
Right, I'm sorry about that.
No, but it is. It's very frightening. And, looking at the world and realizing in a way that the world is partially a reflection of your mind, or it could be used that way to learn, it's kind of frightening what the lessons currently being learned are, or not being learned, as the case may be. Are you familiar with the term wanderer?
I've heard it, but I don't know much about it. Go ahead.
The way that it came to me and the way that it's kind of stuck in my mind are, basically walk-ins are as you described. They're souls who, basically are to come here to do something, but they don't need to go through the whole incarnation process. So somebody will, as you say, there's a soul who doesn't want to be there, or for whatever reason wants to leave. So rather than allowing that to lead to death, they allow somebody else in, to the body. And yes, you have everything that the body comes with, memories and so forth, and whatever conditions are in the body, you have to deal with them. But you always feel like you don't belong. And therefore, that's the start of your quest. If I don't belong here, where do I belong? And so on and so forth. A wanderer is an incarnational thing within a particular family. So, for instance, in ancient Greece, in the mythology, it's described how the gods would they would mix their seed in with certain families to produce certain individuals at certain times. So my understanding of wanderer, and that was a common term like maybe 30, 40 years ago in describing this type of thing. I haven't seen it used very much now. So wanderers are part of the whole process. So basically you have a family. Now they're called bloodlines, which I don't particularly care for that term because of its connotation with the type of folk that you brought up earlier. But families are prepared over many generations to be vessels for a certain type of soul that is associated with the family, but produces vehicles that could best house that particular soul when it's here, and that contain ancestral memories and things like that that would be helpful. So it's like another avenue of a starseed, instead of going into something at a certain point and taking over from there, which is, you know, a valid way, and it's a shortcut. It's something that is multi-generational, where you continue to incarnate back into a particular your family or series of families to be able to do specific tasks. And it's a normal human life, like all of our lives are normal in very many ways, but it gives you a different type of background that if you're of a mind to pursue it, you'll find certain things rather quickly because they're part of the programming.
Right. I had an experience that I hadn't thought about very much. In 76 or 77, we had moved into this house, and I was married at the time, and it was built in the 1900s, and you could look out of the corner of one of the rooms out to the outside. It was in really bad shape, and we fixed it up, but I had had some lucid dreams, and one of these dreams, I became lucid, and I floated up into the attic. And I got up there, and I was looking around, and the attic was like three sides of a pyramid at that particular place, or the frame of a pyramid. So I was standing up there. Of course, there's nothing in the attic, and I saw this picture frame on the wall, a small picture frame that would hold like a Polaroid. And mm-hmm. I walked up to it, and I recognized a picture I took when they were building an overpass in Dallas in the 60s, and the concrete things to hold up the road looked sort of like crosses, so I took pictures of it. And I noticed, I was looking at this picture, and I noticed there was a little blinking light, a white blinking sort of light in the very, on one of those things, and I walked up to it, and a voice started telling me that it wanted to change places with me, that it wanted me to go into the picture, and that it wanted to use my body for just a little while, and it would come right back, and it would get me out of the picture and put me back in my body. And I actually considered it for just a brief moment, but then I went, no, I don't think so. And then I was in my bed awake.
I had a similar to that. I was three or so, and it was in the Bronx. But you made the right choice.
I think so. You know, I've been my soul two different times, and during both those times, I was a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see 360 degrees, which I can't even picture or comprehend now.
Yes, those states of mind, when you can attain them, or states of spirit, are remarkable. Even if you just work with dreams, and dreams are the closest altered state that we experience daily, even if we don't remember it, you can get all sorts of, are you participant? Are you the observer? Are you both at the same time? And having two perspectives simultaneously is also, it's like, again, seeing 360 degrees and the time not existing. That's another puzzle to contemplate when you're back here and you can't really understand it and can't really grasp it.
I think this gives us a slight window into the way some of them think, because they... Mm-hmm. Some of them, the ones that are dimensional, they can see, at least part of the time, 360 degrees. And they're also extremely aware of the past, the present, and the future. In fact, I think that those things don't exist for them. It's just all. So they're like, anyway, their thought processes have got to be pretty far out there.
I'm in agreement.
And I think this is why it's difficult for us, or for them, for us to communicate with them or understand exactly. I think they might say like one word, and to us it means literally that one word, but it might have a symbolic meaning to it, you know, like symbols. A symbol of a circle can mean many, many things. It means all of them, the sun, you know, the beginning of the universe, or I don't remember the exact phases, but a symbol means a lot of things, and we interpret it as one or two things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as far as I've gotten on that theory.
Well, it's a good start, and you're cracking that nut and untying that knot. So during one of our conversations, you'll have shared that you finally cracked it.
I think so. I keep working on it.
Now, in terms of the mission, because all starseeds that I've ever met have a very strong sense of mission or purpose, and also many of them who aren't active are awaiting like some sort of activation, some sort of signal that they would recognize, and then they would proceed with what it is that they're supposed to do. Where are you on that, particular aspect? Like, do you know what you're here to do, and are you actively doing it, or are you waiting for some sort of signal?
I'm a communicator. I'm supposed to talk to people. I'm supposed to write a book, which I've done, write things, and I'm also supposed to help abductees or contactees or experiencers, whatever you want to call them, to help them to become a little bit more comfortable with their situation, especially the first timers are the ones that have just suddenly realized, wow, this has not been my guardian angel all my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm supposed to do that. Of course, all of us are supposed to expand our consciousness. And
right.
Consciousness is a thing, and there's just so much of it. So in times of war, let's just say, everybody's focused on the war. That means there's a lot of consciousness free for those few who can control themselves and work to expand their consciousness. They can gobble it up. But the more people that are doing it, the more it will grow. It's like putting drops of water in the ocean. You may not notice it, but the ocean has increased. So we're all supposed to do that, in my opinion. And I've been doing that since I was 21.
Awesome. And do the Celestials communicate any particular type of teachings through you or to you?
Not as much now, but some. But they used to. Now, I didn't know it was them. I would have a question about metaphysics or something, and I would just have this strong compulsion to go to this local bookstore that had metaphysical books in it. It's gone now. But I'd walk up to the thing, and I'd look at the books, and I'd be, and then one of them would draw my, I'd beam in on it, and I'd pick it up,
uh-huh.
and I'd open it. And usually I would open it exactly to the page that answered my question. And then if I felt like I should buy the book, I would buy the book. Now, I thought I was doing this on my own, but I've realized later that it wasn't me. They were guiding me.
That's called bibliomancy, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
When I used to teach community colleges and things, I taught a psychology class. And one of the exercises I gave to people was, ask a question. And go somewhere where there are books just basically see what book draws you. Now take that book and open it up at random and put your finger down and see if that answers your question. And most of the time, when people did that, they found answers. And in ancient times, they called it bibliomancy. Biblio means book. And mancy comes from mandiki, which means, an oracle or divination.
Right, right. I had heard of that term a long time ago. I just didn't remember it. They talk to me through books a lot. And now I just get ideas. And I know that, how did I get that idea? Because it wasn't really anything. It wasn't me. And I have a photographic memory, so quite often I developed this through art. I had an art teacher who said, my first real art teacher, who said, I want you, because, and I'm going to jump back, I got my first degree in English and then somehow switched over to art because of a person that was a good friend of mine. So anyway, my teacher said, I don't want you to plan anything. I said, okay. He said, I just want you to just come up with the idea and don't plan anything. He said, you can write it down or draw it down as a, whatever you call that. You can doodle it down, he said, but don't work it out. Get the idea and make it. So I started doing that. He said, I know you can do this. He started doing that. So I started doing it. And like I would sit down watching TV and just these pictures would blow in my head. So I'd make a quick sketch so I wouldn't remember them. I actually did a sculpture that after I got it built, I realized it was supposed to float in the air and I had no way to make that happen. So that was funny. But yeah. Pictures just flow into my head. And I think they direct some of them.
Oh, that is awesome. And it'd be interesting to see how that starts manifesting in the future.
Yeah, I'll have a problem and I'll go, oh, I need to figure out how to get up to the top of the roof without falling off of this ladder. And then I walk away. And after a while, a picture pops in my head and I go, not that one. And then a few hours later, this frame thing that I was supposed to bolt on the side of the house and put the ladder in it came up. And I went, well, that's perfect. It was just made out of 2x4s. I built it and I got all the way up to the top of the house, which was about 20 feet, 25 feet up in the air. And believe me, that ladder started moving from side to side when you were climbing it without that frame.
And again, the solution was there, and a power other than yourself helped you find it.
It seemed to be. It was like magic.
And in a way, in a very real way, yes. We're approaching the end of our conversation for today, and I want to give you the opportunity to share with our listeners where they can get your book. And where they can find and connect with you.
You can find me on Facebook, and it's under, if you just look up Byron Lacy, it'll take you to me. I have two different pages on there. One is for music and one is for just Facebook, but you can send me a message on there either way. And my book is on Amazon.com and my music too. And it's called Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. The easiest way is just to type in my name because it will take you to all my stuff. And you look through there, it's got a really nice gray and black cover. And my music was inspired by alien music that I heard playing in my headphones when I was listening to a meditation CD that was something completely different. And after 2 years of thinking it over, I figured out how to make it.
If you want on a future show when you're on, if you want to focus on your music, if you send me a few files of what you'd like played, we could play it in between the conversation and give people that experience.
That'd be cool. I'll send them to you, and we'll either use them or not use them. I would like you to hear them anyway.
Oh, I would love to hear them, and I feel that it would make for an excellent conversation and add further depth to the things that we've already been discussing. Now, before we finish for today, a lot of people are experiencing these things, and you know, they don't have the context to make sense of them, because in the popular culture, there's still speculative things that, you know, people tend to minimize or ridicule. So what would you recommend to somebody who's having experiences that they can't explain and wants to seek, you know, answers or information on what is happening to them? How would you suggest they start?
Well, I would look up, I would Google or whatever you want to call it. I would look up, how do I know if I'm being abducted by aliens, or am I an alien abductee? And it will lead you to pages, and they usually have about 90 to 100 questions, and you answer those. And if the majority of them are yes, then they say you're probably an abductee, at which point you could join a group on Facebook that is of new abductees or of starseed who have been abducted for a long time. I mean, there's all kinds of support groups. They've began flourishing again on Facebook, where they had sort of, or I had gotten out of contact with them. And you can also look up, like my case has been investigated by three different people. Daryl Sims in Houston, and I picked him because he was in Houston, he's not far from me. And then a man up north whose name I can't remember right now, and they're listed in the book. And I talked through email with Kathleen Martin a lot and sent her pictures. And she didn't say, you're an abductee, but she said, these are the kind of pictures that my abductees send me. So she would verify that at least I had that in common with them. And I know Kathleen from those emails, and we're Facebook friends. She was a big help.
Byron, thank you so very much. You're awesome, and I learned a lot by speaking with you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
I do too, and I really enjoyed talking with you as well.
Thank you. So thanks for being on, and thanks to everybody who's tuned in to listen, whether you're listening live right now or whether you're going to tune in later to listen on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And may you wake up to your true self. We're going to close, as we often do, with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till you feel. till it's real. Dream till it's real. Dream.